There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to MetroPCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to MetroPCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at MetroPCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Spotlight Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program author Rob Roselli. Rob, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, Neil, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Rob, doing great. And, you know, we continue to watch the election process begin. And, you know, and as you said before, it really doesn't matter in your whole thought process, because regardless, we're going down the tubes. Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter.
No, I mean, we've been talking, I mean, I guess almost since we began here. I mean, it's irrelevant. Who wins the presidential race, Congress, or anything? And until we get to the crux of the problem, at least financially, the Federal Reserve System, which nobody's talking about, no, absolutely nobody. I mean, Ron Paul and his son Rand, at least they're addressing the problem. And Ron Paul actually wanted to get rid of the Fed, but they're the only ones. I mean, you see where Rand Paul is. I mean, he's in the toilet as far as his popularity or his numbers in the presidential race. So it's, for that reason alone, and a host of other reasons, but for that reason alone, we're pretty much doomed. And it's a mathematical certainty. It's not like I'm sitting here and saying and making stuff up, or, you know, who killed Kennedy or something like that, speculation. I think we started this a little bit last week, talking about geometry and math. I mean, mathematics, you're right or you're wrong. And in this case, it's just a mathematical certainty. There's two ways about it. I mean, you have a system of perpetual debt. The only way, you can really solve the problem, America's debt problem, is just to get rid of the Federal Reserve System. And even these so-called conservative talk show hosts, you know, Limbaugh and the other guys, I love these guys. They're great, you know, the conspiracy kooks, and you need a Federal Reserve System or this sort of thing. It's just nonsense. So anyway, I mean, and besides, these guys, most of these guys are a bunch of buffoons anyway. I mean, we have these real dopes. In the case of Hillary Clinton, just a snake, not a stupid woman, but just a serpent in the grass, just a complete scumbag. I don't know the names. I mean, it's irrelevant. Is the bottom line.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you're so right about just basically all that's going on, both political sides. You can't even decide to look at. They're all out for their best interest. They want what they can do to become the most popular, make the most money, and still try to serve the public to their, I wouldn't say best interest, but what the best interest that serves the leader, which is not leadership, and it's going to fail.
No. That's another thing. I mean, that's another interesting point is, you know, the way the laws are written, apparently a lot of these jokers, I mean, there's no standards to running for president. I mean, a lot of these guys and women, they make money and they get to keep a lot of the money that people send to them, you know, to run for president. I mean, again, it's a joke. I mean, for example, you know, I saw the statistics on the voting percentages, Trump. Just for example, show you what a joke the whole thing is, without even getting into the whole Federal Reserve thing. I mean, you just look at this the Trump phenom, we'll call it, or whatever, and you look at his numbers, okay, among likely voters or whatever it is, and, you know, look at a thing this morning. I mean, Trump is as popular, you know, just going on a percentage basis, as, say, I think Ted Cruz is the second on the Republican ticket, and he's 10 points lower. But if you take everybody else, there has to be almost a dozen names. And you add all those numbers, all those percentages up together in terms of popularity, they just about equal, or they're statistically, they're just about equal to what Trump is by himself. So, like, if Trump is, you know, 34 or 36% or whatever it is of likely Republican voters, or whatever the number is, the bottom, say 10, and some of these guys and gals are in single digits. So it's like, you know, what are you doing in a race? What do you think you're going to do? But yet they continue to plug away and make money, and, you know, they still get on Fox News and act like they have a snowball's chance in hell. So it's just, and of course, you know, you have the Republican so-called establishment just coming out viciously against Trump. I mean, obviously, which is a good thing. I mean, I'll just say it for what it is. I mean, it's good to see Trump stirring up the hornet's nest and pissing a lot of people off in the Republican establishment. I mean, these lackeys that they want to see, you know, Jeb Bush, another Bush as a Republican nominee, and some people, some of the big money people, the real losers and the neocons saying, if, you know, Trump's the nominee, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to start a third party, or they're going to do something or do this. Yes, you're really, at least the case of Trump, at least he's, in some respects, I mean, I find it interesting. He's found his Christian side all of a sudden, it seems.
Right.
I mean, we talked about that briefly, too, but it's just funny the way he is eliciting this book. Vicious response to so many establishment Republicans. I think it's great. I mean, I think it's almost comical to me to see these. I mean, here you have a guy who by all, you know, by many sources is going to draw 20+% of likely Democrat voters. You know, the Republicans are still, they're still fighting them. I mean, it's obvious. You can see the country club mentality or the connectivity of these two parties, how they're tied at the hip ultimately by what Trump is doing and what Trump is exposing. And then I have to say, you're just a complete idiot at this point. I mean, you know, there's nothing else. If you can't see that, it's just, I don't know what to say. So I think in that regard, I think he's great. You know, will he be the victim of a magic bullet, or, you know, a bullet that, you know, turns itself in midair and, you know, it causes seven different wounds and shows up at a hospital in a pristine condition and, you know, they come up and tell you that, oh, this was the bullet and here's the guy that did it. I'm talking about the Kennedy assassination or something like that. But who knows? Who knows? I mean, ultimately, and that's another interesting road to go down one day, is you're talking about all these politicians who actually stood up to the Federal Reserve System and or the establishment itself. And the list is long, starting with Abraham Lincoln, James Garfield. There's a few other names in there, the Congressman Louis McFadden, Joe McCarthy, the great Senator Joe McCarthy from Wisconsin was another one. And, of course, JFK himself, you know, all I've met unseemly, I've met their demise, and never been heard from again. But anyway,
right.
But that's it. I mean, even Trump doesn't go far enough. I mean, I haven't heard Trump talk about the Federal Reserve System as a businessman. If anybody, he should know better. And I'm sure he does know better. And who knows? Maybe he's not saying anything because he knows he doesn't want to sound like a conspiracy kook, and he wants to wait until he gets in there to do something, or he knows who his criminal masters are, or he's just blind to it. You know, it's just, I, you know, who knows? Who ultimately knows? But I think we have bigger things to talk about. But anyway, I'll just
Where do we go now, Rob? I mean, like I said, we've gone and reviewed a lot of different things, but I know you have a spot where you want to continue the conversation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. I mean, just to review last week. I mean, we talked about. We really went into this concept of the occult conspiracy. And again, you know, for people that are listening, the website is boxofsunglasses.com. That's one word on there. My book, The Un-American Genocidal Complex, there's links for it. You can get the book. And that's kind of like a Cliff Notes version of everything we talked about. And as you well know, it's hard to predict where these shows go every night. You know, each week that we do them, but the Cliff Notes version of everything you talk about is pretty much in that book. It's a 2 to 3 hour read, so you can get down to it on the website. All the other information is there. Let me just say this before we go. And sometimes we lose track of this. I'm just as guilty as anybody. I mean, really, the most important link on that website, on my website at least, and the thing we need to lose track of it is that God is in control of this whole mess. There's a link on there called God's Simple Salvation Plan. And really, the creator of the universe, and he that set the foundations of the earth and spread out the heavens, Psalm 104, he who laughs, he will laugh at the world, and the world try to rise up against him ultimately in the last battle called Armageddon, Psalm chapter 2. And ultimately, he is in control of this whole mess, of this whole thing that's just, when you look around and your eyes are open and you see what's really going on outside the world, outside of the idiocy that they show you on Fox News. And you understand what's going on and the breakdown in society and the wars, the rumors of wars, et cetera, the birth pangs for Matthew 24, but ultimately, God's in control of this whole thing, okay? We're on this speck of dust in the middle of infinite nothingness called the universe, the creator of it all. We're on his time frame and his program. I mean, ultimately, none of us can explain what that is exactly. And we have his word, John chapter 1. He was in the world. The world was made by him, and the world knew him not. And in the beginning was the word, and the word was God, and the word was with God. And the word is the light of God. You know, going back to the beginning of John's gospel, John chapter 1. So we have the light of the gospel, and we can begin to understand and get a glimpse, but ultimately nobody's ever going to fully understand the program. Isaiah 55 is another one to read in that regard. But anyway, I just want to throw that out there to people. As bad as things are, you don't need to be freaking out. Ultimately, I mean, look, none of us are perfect. I mean, I'm not perfect. I mean, you know, we're still going to have worries, and on a human level, you're still going to worry about things. But ultimately, you should. I make sure that out there because, you know, let's face it, the stuff we talk about, I mean, World War III, the United States getting nuked, or in an EMP attack, or, you know, this war and this economic collapse, and all this other nonsense, and the Illuminati, and who controls the world, and economic collapse and this sort of thing. It's really nothing. Okay, it's nothing. Okay, the nations are as nothing. Okay, to him, you know, Isaiah chapter 40. So again, you know, if I get on here and you and I talk, and sometimes I guess we almost talk matter of factly, and we sound almost not that excited, you know, relative to what we're really talking about. That's really the reason behind it. You know, everything is in his hands. That's ultimately where I think we need to rest. You know, in Matthew chapter 11. You know, come to me, all ye who are burdened. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light.
Exactly.
So again, so just as an aside, we'll just leave it at that. Now, That being said, you know, staying with the overall focal point of the show, which is to really focus on the Bible and the Word of God and to where we're going. Last week, we spent almost the entire hour, and I don't think it was really planned. Things just kind of went that way, but we talked about this concept of Freemasons and Freemasonry and this concept of the great architect of the universe, okay? And then basically, you know, what we talked about was, say, look, I mean, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the Eastern establishment, what I call the modern-day un-American genocidal complex, the Skull and Bones crew, the Bilderberg group, you know, all the names that are familiar to your run-of-the-mill conspiracy group, like yours truly, is ultimately, it's all this worship of something they call the great architect of the universe, which is nothing more than the serpent, or Lucifer, later Satan, going back to the Old Testament, and all we talked about, and again, just for a review, I mean, today's January 25th, 2016, so that would be the January 18th, 2016 version of the show, and I'm working on getting those things posted on the website, and I don't want to get into that right now, but anyway, that's the overall, thematically, that's what we talked about, was that these the people that are running the show, these occultists, are very much into numerology and astrology. Remember we talked about that astrology, you be careful not to confuse it with this, you know, this dime store, you know, boardwalk, you know, nonsense, you know, Ann Landers or whoever, you know, writing in the New York Daily News with, you know, horoscopes and this sort of thing. The real astrology is the precursor and set the foundation for modern-day astronomy, okay? And it was the science, it was the main science of the so-called ancient religions of going back to Sumeria, which is generally regarded as the first known civilization, and then, you know, carried forward to Egypt, the so-called ancient Egypt, okay, which is really the focal point of the New Testament, okay? The ancient Egypt, of all the countries, okay, is the main adversary of Israel, of physical Israel, the Old Testament. You know, God's chosen people in the Old Testament.
Right.
And going back to the book of Exodus and Genesis and this sort of thing. Let me just speak to that for a minute. Okay, this is something I've been meaning to talk about just as another little branch off here. And then we'll get back to this concept of geometry in ancient Egypt. Israel of the Old Testament, and Abraham was, you know, the original, you know, founder of the Semitic people. I mean, you know Isaac. You know, you had Isaac and Ishmael, okay, and this sort of thing. And this is, again, this is the mistake that most of these so-called biblical, the prophecy experts, so-called, these self-anointed, I don't even know what made these guys think they're prophecy experts. I guess they went to Dallas Theological Seminary or whatever. They get on the Trinity Broadcasting Network, and they don't know what the blank they're talking about, okay, because Israel... Physical Israel, God's chosen people, is a concept that went out for good some 2,000 years ago. And really, if you read the Old Testament, I mean, it's nothing but the physical Israel breaking God's covenant. We'll get into this a little bit in Exodus in a minute, but Israel, physical Israel, is absolutely not God's chosen people in the New Testament era. I don't know how much more clear...
Right.
It can be made in the New Testament. If you read John's Gospel, and just read, for example, or Matthew 23, and then Jesus spends the whole time just lambasting these guys, and he asks them, you know, how can you escape the damnation of hell? And in Matthew chapter 3, and, you know, John the Baptist is calling them a generation of vipers. You know, and don't think to yourselves, because we have Abraham as our father, you know, you're Abraham's people, God can raise children to Abraham from these stones. So in other words, you know, physical earth has nothing to do with being God's chosen people. So it's just nonsense. So the point is, if you're listening to these people and you just blindly think, oh, you know, he who curses Israel, you're God's going to curse those who curse Israel. It's all a bunch of crap, okay, from a theological standpoint. Now, that being said, I'm not one of these people. You know, you go to the other extreme, and now you got these, I don't know what you call these people, but they're these out there, you know, these anti-Zionists, and they, you know, they're 100% against right. Israel. You know, Israel's, you know, the title with the tribe of Dan, or the lost tribe of Dan, and they, you know, the real chosen people are these white, you know, Europeans, which really has elements of Nazism in it, okay, with the Aryan race and the superiority of the white race and this kind of nonsense. So those, I just want to make it clear, I'm not one of those people either, okay? I'm not anti-Israel, okay? And from a secular right. standpoint, I have a lot of respect for the nation of Israel. I think they're, it's a tough country. They're tough people. They're smart. They do have one of the only democracies and the most desirable country in the Middle East, okay, and they really deserve a lot of respect and admiration for what they've been able to do since their founding in 1948 as far as surviving, okay, and just to speak to that, okay, while we're on the subject, okay, I do believe that the last generation, that this last, you know, several decades of, you know, people in Israel, there's the possibility that they will be saved. Okay, I think there is a biblical argument to be made for that, and that is in Ezekiel chapter 36. Okay, and God says, I am going to regather you, not because of anything you did, but to preserve my holy name. So in other words, God chose Israel. They kept rebelling. Okay, he finally, you know, you had the first temple destroyed in 586 B.C., and then in 70 A.D., you had what I'm calling the third temple. But anyway, that's a conversation for another time, not the second temple. You know, the third temple people are these evangelicals
right, right.
who can't figure out that the physical temple in Israel in the 21st century, you know, so we can have, you know, the Antichrist, this comic book Antichrist standing up in this third temple, it's just not going to happen, okay? It's not biblical. But anyway, I do believe that the founding of the modern-day nation of Israel is biblical, but it's fully explained in chapter 36 of Ezekiel, where God says, you know, I am going to regather you, but to preserve my holy name, nothing for what you did. And then he goes in and seems to imply that he will come and defend, and he will save this last several decades of the people of Israel. But again, it's got nothing to do with them being his chosen people throughout history. You know, that's a separate and a minor issue, and that's God's business, okay? But again, the point is, yes, the foundation of the modern-day Israel does answer a lot of biblical prophecies, but again, that's all there is to it. We don't need to worship these people like the Trinity Broadcasting Network would have us believe, okay? Because the real Israel, okay, and this is in Romans chapter 9, and I don't know how much more clear God can make it. The real Israel is the body of Christ, or the believers in Christ.
Right, right.
Okay, and this has been going on for the past 2,000 years, okay? So it's almost, in that regard, it's almost insulting to the people, to the true Christians, okay, that have been, you know, going all the way back to ancient, you know, going back to the Roman Empire, okay, these Christians that were being burned at the stake or fed to lions, you know, the bread and circuses, okay, the entertainment that served as the entertainment of the Roman Empire, just as the Roman Empire was in this moral decadence, okay, this death, endless wars, okay, overextended military, illegal aliens overrunning the place, people literally starving in the streets, okay, but at the same time just wanting to be entertained to death at the Roman Colosseum, watching Christians being burned at the stake and fed to lions, okay, and of course you had all the other groups throughout history being persecuted by the so-called Christian church, you know, the Roman church, so-called, and the Lollards, the Huguenots. I mean, even the Puritans and the Pilgrims that founded this nation, you know, they were persecuted by the Catholic Church or its offshoots like the Anglican Church. They were being burned at the stake, a lot of them, and run out of town and tortured and this sort of thing. So for me, to sit here and worship the nation of physical Israel and say that these are God's chosen people is to ignore the sacrifices, the real, this torture, and this what these real Christians have had to endure for almost 2,000 years. I mean, those are, that's your true church, okay? That's your body of Christ, okay? You can read about that in the book of Ephesians chapter 2. You know, the house of God is the body of believers, okay? The foundation and this sort of thing. Okay, it has nothing to do with some ridiculous physical temple that's going to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. Okay, it's complete nonsense. I just want to be clear on that, so people are listening. You know, they may be wondering, you know, I don't know what this guy's talking about. I'm sure I heard this somewhere. You know, I listened to Hal Lindsey on the Trinity Broadcasting Network and all these other jokers out there, and you know, they got to build, you know, the Israel, you know, the Israel, whatever, the priesthood, the Levitical priesthood back, and the red heifer back, and they're going to start rebuilding the third temple, and the Antichrist is going to come and his pitchfork and his horns, and he's going to get up there and say, "I am God," and we're going to have a 7-year tribulation, and the church is going to be raptured, and 3.5 years later, the people of Israel are going to be taken in pre-tribulation and post-tribulation. It's all a bunch of crap. That's what I'm getting at, okay? And people have been getting so used to this because these guys and gals have been selling books for decades, just selling this crap and just interpreting and misinterpreting and ripping each other off and copying each other as to what's what. I mean, we alluded to this a little bit. I mean, people have read Revelation, and for example, and you know, we can go back into Revelation, but you know, I'm going off on tangents here, but there's a point to it. But symbolism in Revelation, most of it is just that, okay? Most of it is not to be taken literally in a worldly sense, okay? And actually, this can kind of segue right into what I wanted to talk about tonight. For example, the two witnesses, Revelation, it goes in chapter 11 and chapter 12, okay? It talks about the two witnesses, you know, they shall bring fire down. And to me, it's readily apparent that what God is talking about, the number two is symbolic there, okay? And we talked about this last week. I mean, most of the numbers in the Bible are either outright symbolic in nature or they're physical, but much more importantly, it's a symbolic meaning to those physical numbers. But anyway, the two witnesses are not going to be Moses and Elijah running around throwing lightning bolts and, you know, and pointing their fingers and, burning people like flamethrowers and they're not going to be killed and lying in Jerusalem for 3.5 days and the world is going to celebrate this. They see these guys, you know, and everybody's got satellite TV and everybody can watch this on TV. That's not the case. Okay. The two witnesses are the Old Testament prophets. Okay. And I think that's something we can explore in a future show. But another example, okay, of this concept of the figurative and the symbolism of the book of Revelation is this concept, and we've talked about this several times, okay, is this concept of the number of the beast, okay, Revelation 13, it says to count or calculate the number of the beast, 600, 666. So it's 6 + 6 + 6, okay, which is 18.
Right.
Okay. Just which is the real number of the beast. And remember, we talked about this. And if you go to 18, then the most obvious, the most glaring example of this is this 18th degree of the Scottish Rite form, okay, of Freemasonry, okay. It was called the Rosicrucian, or the Rosy Cross degree of Freemasonry. Remember, we talked about the Rosicrucian, the rose plus the cross, the rose, or it's this Greek and Roman mythology, okay, is equivalent to the English, the Egyptian, the lotus flower in ancient Egypt, which is symbolic of the male side of the equation, okay, roses, the male side.
Right.
Which is the Egyptian god Osiris, which equates to the Greek god Apollo, okay, Apollyon from Revelation chapter 9. And then on the cross side of the equation, okay, we have the four points of the cross, the four kingdoms of, or the four cardinal directions, okay, you know, the point is the cross represents the female side, okay, of the equation of Freemasonry, okay, so you get the rose plus the cross, the Rosicrucians, Osiris and the whore goddess Isis from ancient Egypt, okay, which equates to, say, the Greek goddess Artemis, the Roman goddess Diana, and other female offshoots. Okay, so that's really symbolism there, okay? Again, it's not some ridiculous, some clownish, you know, Antichrist sitting there in his temple, you know, throwing 666 and stamping people between their foreheads with some seal, that says, okay, you know, you accept the mark of the beast, you're gonna burn in hell, you're gonna burn in flames forever. It's a ridiculous concept. Okay, that's really what's being talked about here, and that goes back again to ancient Egypt. Remember, you go back to the Garden of Eden and the Tree of Knowledge of Good and Evil. Remember, we talked about this last week, and really, what it is. It's a study, it's a play on numbers, it's a study in geometry, okay, and if you think about it, okay, this is where we're going to start tying some of this stuff together. If you think about it, again, what is the basis of our reality? I mean, look, I mean, you and I and everybody listening are all imperfect humans. We're never going to, our opinions, our interpretations, et cetera, are always going to be inherently imperfect, okay? So that's just what we are as humans. We're imperfect. You know, what is the only thing that's 100% true in the world is mathematics, okay? Is numbers, okay? And what I'm saying is the tree of knowledge of good and evil per, and I'll just review this real quick, per Matthew chapter 16, is really a study in numbers and numerology, okay? Because if you think about it, we can't do anything. We can't live, we can't breathe, we can't eat unless, you know, our whole reality, in other words, is based on numbers. You know what I'm saying? What we see is based on a certain wavelength of light, you know, what we eat, and gravity, just you know, what you're listening to right now, you know, the sound you're listening to on the radio comes out at a certain wavelength, okay, which we'll get into here in a second with the pyramids. You know, everything, our reality is based on numbers. And that's really what we're talking about here. I mean, I know it's a hard concept to grasp. But remember, and I'll say this, I'll review this again real quick, but this is important to this conversation. And I promise this is going somewhere, but Matthew chapter 16, remember where Jesus, the apostles are arguing, we forgot to take bread, and then Jesus looks at him and says, you fools, I'm not talking to you. But Jesus says, beware the leaven of the Pharisees. Remember, because they came up to him and they said, we want to see a sign. We demand to see a sign, and Jesus tells them, he says, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, but no sign shall be given to it except that from the prophet Jonah, okay? And then later on, they're arguing amongst themselves, and Jesus says, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, okay? And their argument says, it's because we didn't bring bread. And Jesus looks at them and says, you imbeciles, you fools, don't you remember? You remember the feeding the five loaves for the 5,000? I'm sure a lot of people remember that. If not, you can read about it in Matthew 15, Matthew 14 and 15. But anyway, he says to them, I'm not talking to you about bread. I'm talking to you about the leaven of the Pharisees, and he stresses it. And finally they figure it out and say, he's not he's not talking to you about physical bread. He's talking to you about the doctrine, okay, the beliefs of the Pharisees, some of which he's tying in eating in a spiritual sense, okay? And again, this that harkens all the way back to Genesis, okay? In Genesis chapter 3, you know, ye shall not eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So in other words, eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil has nothing to do with physical food. It has to be has to do with this desire to eat or to be nourished in the doctrine of creation.
Right.
The tree of knowledge of good and evil. So, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is, if you look at technology, for example, I think this is what I'm getting at. And you know, really, I mean, modern the technology can look, you have hospitals, all this modern equipment. Okay, so that's the good side of it. Now, the bad side of it is, of course, you can also invent nuclear weapons. Okay, with technology, which is based on you know science, which is just foundation, which is numbers. So you have good and evil, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So in other words, this is our reality itself, in other words. So again, it's a much, what I'm getting at, this is a much broader scope. There's a much bigger picture going on. What I'm talking about is reality and the history and human history itself, okay? It's not confined to the tiny nation of Israel over there in the Middle East is what I'm getting at. And hopefully I didn't lose too many people for too many people, but this is important to understand. This foundation is important to understand moving forward, and it does have a point. I promise, and I'll kind of give it a break here. But then we can get into it. This ties into the pyramid. I mean, the most familiar pyramid, or you know, most conspiracy kooks talk about ad nauseum, the pyramid on the back of your fiat Federal Reserve note. So if you think this stuff has no bearing, pull out your wallet, put out a dollar bill, look on the back of it, and everything I talked about for the last half hour has plenty of relevance.
It definitely has plenty of relevance, and that really looking at numbers and prophecy is an important thing when you're looking at specifically the end of the world. The numbers, based on your research, that's at boxofsunglasses.com to purchase it. And then again, the percentages, right? Numbers and percentages.
Well,
yeah.
Well, look, I mean, look, the percentages, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know if it's like, you get into like Luke chapter 17, you know, where the only concept, like, figure percentages, you know, Jesus heals 10 lepers and only one of them turns around to actually say thanks. I mean, so it's only 1 out of 10 people actually recognizes who he was. There may be some percentages tied up in that number. But really, again, the important thing with that whole diatribe, say the last half hour or so, was to set the foundation, okay? Just come at this thing from another direction, okay? So in other words, you know, just going back to ancient Egypt, and that now you can start putting the picture, hopefully starting to come into focus. In other words, when Moses is leading the people of Israel, okay, God's chosen people in the Old Testament, Israel, and he's leading them through the desert, okay, and he disappears for 40 days, you know, to go up, you know, and you know, get the Ten Commandments. You know, what does the body of Israelites do? Okay, and a lot of people are probably sitting out there, and maybe they've lost interest in religion, or they think it's a bunch of nonsense, or it doesn't make any sense, or it's people think it's just a bunch of Sunday school stories. That's not the case at all, okay? So when the people start worshiping a golden calf, okay, what are they really worshiping? But the sun god Osiris and his female cohort, his wife / sister, okay, which is an ancestral relationship, which actually echoes or ties directly into the concept of Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, by the way, which is, we could probably get into that, but I don't want to go off on that right now. But, you know, mythology, so-called ancient mythologies, I mean, the echoes, the parallels to what's talked about in the Old Testament are absolutely astounding. To the point where I believe they're talking about the same story from a very different perspective, and we touched on that with the ancient aliens. But anyway, the golden calf, Isis and Osiris, okay, you know, Isis, you know, one of her, you know, female offshoots, okay, was a goddess, okay, a female, the cow goddess, Hathor, okay, she was kind of like the earthly offshoot of Isis, okay, you know, with, and let me just speak to that, okay, you start talking about these gods and goddesses of mythology, I mean, really, you start running into contradictions, and you get to a point where you don't know who the hell's what or who's who anymore, okay, you know, and it, this is actually addressed in the book of Isaiah, okay, I think it's Isaiah, I want to say chapter 40 or 41, and God says, you know, your idols are wind and confusion, okay, and what God is saying is, you know, none of this makes, ultimately none of it makes any sense, and it doesn't, so, but anyway, I'll just say this in general, that Isis was the female cohort of the sun god Ra, or Apollo, Osiris, or Xena, whatever you want to call them, okay, and one of her female equivalents was the cow goddess Hathor of ancient Egypt. Okay, so you have that, you have the golden, you have the cow, okay, and then Osiris himself, you know, he was represented, one of his representations, you know, this ties into Zeus, okay, Zeus had some of the qualities of Osiris, but anyway, Zeus, of course, Greek mythology, was represented by a bull, okay, so you can see this concept of the golden calf, the golden bull being worshipped by Israel, who just came out of Egypt, okay, where cows and bulls were regarded as literal representations of
90 seconds.
Okay, so you can see, when you look at the mythology behind all this stuff, then it all starts making sense. And, you know, Moses comes down and he breaks the Ten Commandments and starts yelling at him, basically because you're worshiping the gods that, you know, the God of the, you know, Yahweh or Jehovah or
right.
Jesus, you know, just saved you from, and here you are worshiping them, you know. So this has real relevance.
60 seconds.
Again, this concept of worship of these gods and goddesses, okay, and then if you go back and you take that tag, you know, let's just go back to ancient Egypt for a second. What is the most prominent symbol of ancient Egypt? It's the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is the only one of the seven wonders of the ancient world that's still standing, okay, is the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I have a whole link to this on my site. If you go to boxofsunglasses.com, okay, there's a whole discussion, a whole breakdown on this. Okay, if you go, man, I got so much stuff on his website.
Exactly.
It's hard to keep track of, but if you go,
10 seconds.
Ancient Egypt, okay, and it talks about, you know, page 7 of the website, it talks about this in great detail, but let me just say this. Okay, in the Great Pyramid of Giza, there are two key numbers. When you break it down and you look at ratios and the angle, the side angle of the Great Pyramid, so you come up with two very important numbers. One of them is called the Golden Ratio, which serves from the Golden Ratio. It's just, I don't want to get too much into math. I mean, that might really put people to sleep. But from the Golden Ratio, you can derive mathematically, and I've done this, this concept of, not concept, but a spiral, okay? If you go in, and I'll just leave it at that without going into a detailed discussion on the math, but I did do this, I did derive this, but if you look, okay, the short side of the triangle, of the Great Pyramid, you know, with the angle, it's like 51.7 degrees. It's the side angle of the Great Pyramid. Okay, the base of that triangle is the Golden Ratio, 0.0618.
Right.
Okay, which I don't know, I can talk about that too, with the Invisible College and the Rosicrucians and all that stuff ties together, but I won't do that right now. But if you go on the vertical, you get a number of pi over 4. With the hypotenuse, and if people I remember, you know, the right triangle, you know, you got your short side and your base, and your hypotenuse, you know, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, and people remember their high school geometry. But anyway, if you set that hypotenuse to 1.0, and you make those ratios, you get numerical pi, Okay, so you got numerical pi, the golden ratio, tied up literally in the Great Pyramid at Giza. So remember what we talked about, the great architect of the universe, okay, and what's missing from the Great Pyramid at Giza but a capstone. Remember in Matthew chapter 21 and Psalm 118, remember we've talked about this in the past, you know, Jesus says, you know, the stone that the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. It is marvelous in our eyes. So in other words, what builders, what is he talking about there in this parable in Matthew chapter 21? And people need to go back and read that. This is what he's talking about, okay? Because there's no capstone of the Great Pyramid of Giza, okay? The capstone is missing, okay? And again, turn over your $1 bills and look on the back of it, okay? There you have this concept. This concept is illustrated right in front of our faces. So this is what I'm saying, is that this, quote, conspiracy permeates our reality itself, okay? I mean, money is the, you know, it's the root to all, you know, love of money is the root to all evil, but money, commerce, let's face it, is the root, it is the root of our earthly reality, and he who controls the money supply controls the world, okay? Money flows through the power of the purse strings, and remember all that. But there it is. Hopefully that's not lost on people. And let me just reemphasize that they have the Great Pyramid of Giza on the back of your $1 bill, the Great Pyramid of ancient Egypt sitting there with the stone, the capstone missing, but the capstone represented by an all-seeing open eye, okay? And this open eye is, going back to ancient Egypt, is this third eye, is this eye of Osiris, or this eye of Horus. Okay, it's this illumination, this shining light, this light of illumination. You know, and yes, it does tie into Illuminati, but that is that eye, that open eye, that's represented on your $1 bill, is the stone that the builders accepted. Okay, not rejected, but accepted. Okay, they've chosen worldly gain and worldly power, as exercised, as symbolized by the Pharaoh of ancient Egypt, okay? And this symbolism is still there. The Great Pyramid is still there.
Right.
Hopefully people can grasp what I'm saying, because this is very relevant. Because remember, we talked about this. I mean, we talked about this at the top of the show. Okay? This is why the presidential election is such a joke, okay? Because we have a system, a financial system, based on the fiat dollar with this physical representation of the Great Pyramid of Giza, that's a mathematical certainty, just like it was a mathematical certainty that the Titanic was going to sink. It's a mathematical certainty that our United States debt-based, debt-fueled economy will come crashing down, will fail. Okay, so when Rush Limbaugh gets on there and says, oh, you know, the Republicans cut spending, you know, we can grow our way out of debt and grow it, it's an idiotic, it's asinine, it's stupid, okay? The economy will fail. Well, what's the point of that? The point of it is for control, okay? Because the economy fails, and then we are going to go running to these very same bankers and this very same group who gave us the Federal Reserve System that was designed to fail. They gave it to us in the first place. We're going to go to them for the solution, and now they control us. Okay? And that's the idea of this whole one-world government. We talked about the Georgia Guidestones. If they control us, that means they can decide who lives and who dies and who's going to war,
exactly,
and who's not going to war and how much money you're going to get. This is the problem, okay? Psalm 22, the debtor, the slave to the lender, okay? Just, you know, and I made this point in my first book, okay, called They Live, Great Society of the Undead. All right, I've made this point. I said you can, just as an example, just I'm just trying to tie things together, so hopefully I'm not losing too many people here. But
right.
Anyway, the debtor is slave to the lender. So in other words, we're nothing in this United, modern-day United States. We're nothing but a bunch of debt slaves, okay? Just as in ancient Egypt, the Israelites were slaves
right.
to the Egyptians before they were rescued by Moses. Okay, what were they building? They were supposedly, but they were just slaves to the Egyptians. Okay, just as we are slaves to the modern day Egyptians. Okay, trying to build their one world system again. At the Tower of Babel, going back to Nimrod in Genesis chapter 11, okay, you know, as symbolized by the Great Pyramid of Giza, okay, with its missing capstone, as is happening right now with our cult worshiping our cult overlords, okay, you know, these people really do worship Lucifer. I'm talking about the ones really in control. I'm not talking about these bozos running for president, okay, and there it is right in front of our faces. Again, is this Great Pyramid of Giza staring at us? And you know, of course, look, you listen to the, it's conspiracy kooks and these people are crazy and they the Limbaugh's of the world, you know, they got nothing to say. But this is it. This is what's going on. But the point I make is, you can take all the Harvard, Columbia University, University of Chicago, all these experts, so-called, and all these TV shows, you know, Fox Business and Circus NBC and all these other shows. For how many years, how many decades have these experts been telling us in, you know, economic school and, you know, all these economics classes and John Maynard Keynes, okay, another maniac, this Paul Krugman, another Fabian socialist, John Maynard Keynes, worshiping loser, moron that writes for the so-called newspaper of record, the New York Times, okay, another bought and sold mouthpiece of the global banking right. elite. But anyway, just think about all the experts, okay, talking about the economy and the Federal Reserve and macroeconomics. And I took an economics class in college, and it was terrible. I mean, it didn't make any sense to me. You know, I think I got a C in it, and I just left it at that. But think about all the economic theory, all the stuff that's been written, okay, and it's all a bunch of crap. Let that sink in for a second. But every person that gets on these shows and argues about the economy, every politician, every presidential candidate, okay, just in this country alone, for the last 100 years, with this Federal Reserve system in place, has either been consciously or unconsciously lying to you, the right. American people, about what the system really is. Okay, it's one big fat lie. So you can take the millions of books, the millions and millions of hours, all the television shows, everything you've learned about the economy, all the politicians, everything on TV talking about the economy and the Fed and the Federal Reserve Chairman and Alan Greenspan and Bernanke and all these other criminals, these Goldman Sachs, these criminal bankers, these modern-day money changers. You can take all that, put it on one side of the equation, and you can take Proverbs 22:7, okay, the word of God, and say the debtor is slave to the lender. And I can just sit here and say, you know what, we're all a bunch of debt slaves, and this economy is going to crash, and that's the story. And people would look at me like, you're nuts. Most people would say, this guy's crazy. What's he talking about? He's a conspiracy kook. And I've heard it all. But am I right?
Right.
Or am I wrong? Is this economy going to crash, or is it not going to crash? Is it going to crash because we have this mountain of debt that can never be paid off? It's mathematically true. I mean, it's either true or false that we can never. Think about this, Neil. I'll come at this from another direction. If I was your bank, okay, and I loaned you $10. You know, how would you, and you went out and spent it, you know, you went, you know, you spent it on, you know, you bought some soldiers, you know, or whatever, you bought some food with it, and you spent that money's gone. How would you ever repay me? Okay, just think about that. You can't. Like, how are you going to repay me? How are you going to get that money back to repay me? And if you did get that money back, what would you do? You would collapse the economy. that even if you did that, you couldn't repay me because now I'm charging you interest on the money I just lent you. So now the $10 I lent you, let's say I'm charging you 10% interest, that money just became $11. So where are you, Neil, going to get $11?
Right, exactly.
When you just bought with 10 for me. And I'm oversimplifying it to an extent. But just think about that. Okay, just let that sink in. If you're listening right now, it's going with every work, every hour of work. When you pay your, when you sit down and do your tax returns, okay, and you send away 30% of your whatever it is, you know, this money to the IRS. And by the way, in parentheses, you know, just like the crap politicians of today, these lying pieces of crap. These politicians, and you ask why I'm so cynical, okay, you know, Woodrow Wilson, we talked about him for several shows and what a sellout, what a complete scumbag he was. You know, Woodrow Wilson gave us this whole, our modern-day Federal Reserve System and got us into World War One and all this other stuff. But anyway, the same lines of crap that, you know, these politicians today are selling us, getting on Fox News and O'Reilly and debating and all these other jerk-offs. It's the same lines of crap they were selling us 100 years ago, okay?
Right.
You know, they invented the Federal Reserve System and the federal income tax, you know, the money changers. These guys are slick, okay? They knew what they were doing from the beginning, okay? And, you know, they said, they promised, oh, the federal income tax, it's only going to be on the richest 1% of the population, and it's never going to go above, I'll just make up a number, it's never going to go above 5% of the income of the richest, you know, 1% of the nation. This was the promise made. The federal income tax was like a few lines, okay, and only 1% of the population had to pay. Now think about that. Now think about what this cancer has metastasized. I'm butchering that word, but you get the point. But think about what that has developed into. Sit down with your federal income tax return, okay? So in other words, think about how disturbing and how what I'm really getting at here, okay? So in other words, not only have they screwed us by giving us this system in the first place, on top of that, we have to send money back, fiat dollars back that they let us earn, but we have to send a percentage of that back to the same money changers that invented the money out of nothing, loaned it to us at interest. And on top of that, we got to send the money back to them, okay? So we're nothing but a bunch of hamsters on a spinning wheel. Think about that, okay? This is why Henry Ford, he has this quote, and I'm not going to paraphrase it, but he basically said, if the people of America ever woke up to the fact, he said, it's better that people don't understand how the economy really works, he said, because if people ever woke up to the fact, or to the reality of how the economy really works in this nation, he said there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. So just think about that, okay? If people really grasp simplicity, if they walk through all that. Now, this is one of my favorite movies, John Carpenter's They Live, by the way. You know, if you watch that movie very carefully, and this is really what I'm getting at here, okay? They Live by John Carpenter, okay? Title of my first book. It's really, you know, the inspiration behind this, you know, boxandsunglasses.com. I think, you know, you and Ronnie Piper puts on the sunglasses and all of a sudden, you know, everything becomes, you know, he sees everything for what it is. You know, he's looking through all the magazines and kind of what I'm talking about. It's all a bunch of crap, okay? Because what it's really saying is we are your owners. You are our slaves. You know, work for us. We own you. And these are the subliminal messages that Roddy Piper is seeing after he puts the sunglasses on. I see the hour's almost up here, but anyway, it ties back into ancient Egypt. So the stuff, I guess what I'm saying is everything I'm talking about here has a point, and the point is it's much bigger. It's based in the Bible, and it's much bigger, and it permeates our lives much more than people may realize.
The Bible's prophecy is what you've been talking about tonight with numbers and showing that the numbers biblically and certain things in the scripture and also other markings of what you've discovered in your prophecy have shown that. So again, you can go boxsunglasses.com to purchase your book or go at Rob Roselli to tweet you out or purchase it on Amazon. So Rob, thanks. Colin, man, interesting conversation we had today, and take care.
Hi, man. We'll pick it up next week. Thanks, man.
All right, take care, Rob. See you. God bless. Bye.
There are lots of things you can spend your tax refund on, but one thing you don't have to spend it on? A new smartphone. Switch to Metro PCS now and get not one, but two free 4G LTE smartphones for brands like Samsung and LG. Plus, you're on T-Mobile's blazing fast nationwide 4G LTE network. Hurry, switch to Metro PCS and get two free smartphones after instant rebate. One heck of a deal, only at Metro PCS. Limited time offer. Sales tax not included in phone price. Coverage and services not available everywhere. See store for details and terms and conditions.